It's just a ride. And we can change it anytime we want. It's only a choice. No effort, no work, no job, no savings of money. A choice right now between fear and love. The eyes of fear want you to put bigger locks on your door, buy guns, close yourself off. The eyes of love instead see all of us as one. Here's what we can do to change the world right now to a better ride. Take all that money we spend on weapons and defense each year and instead spend it feeding, clothing, and educating the poor of the world, which it would many times over, not one human being excluded, and we can explore space together, both inner and outer, forever in peace.
And now, coming to you live from Fort Lauderdale, Florida, in Duluth, Minnesota, Dreaming the New American Dream, with your hosts, Chuck Gregory and Mike Pelichek, brought to you by the Rock Creek Free Press.
Another week has passed. It's time for another New American Dream radio show. In the news, Afghans have gotten killed protesting the U.S., big surprise, eh? White phosphorus has been used in densely populated areas by the U.S. forces in Afghanistan. Well, this came from leaked documents, so they'll probably be railroading some other poor scapegoat for it the way they did with Bradley Manning. An Indiana court said it's illegal for citizens to resist police entering their homes, whether or not they have a warrant or any other pseudo-right to be there. And the Supreme Court refused to hear a lawsuit about the CIA torture flights. Oh, yes. Afghan prisoners keep on killing themselves at Guantanamo. I trust you heard the quotes I put around killing themselves. And so it goes in the police state we call America. Closer to home, my wife finally got her state ID card. So she's a real person again. It's nice to be able to touch her, know she's not a ghost or something, or an imaginary friend. It only took a couple of months. A certified copy of the birth certificate, certified copy of our marriage license, a bunch of mail that came to her here at home, a social security card, that kind of stuff. Oh, yeah, well, 50 bucks or so, too. Yeah, altogether. I feel so much safer now compared to when we could renew those IDs for $3 with the old ID. Much safer. Our landlord's put us in charge of our apartment building. He's got heart trouble and can't come down here right now. So we're supposed to do something about convincing the deadbeat tenants that haven't paid rent for months to leave. They ignored all of his 3-day notices, so I don't know why he thinks we're going to have better luck. Plus, I hate being the bad guy. You know, somebody's just trying to have a place to live. But the landlord can't keep the place going if we're the only ones that pay our rent, so I kind of got to do something. It's a mess. Hopefully he'll get better soon and take things back over. I really hope so. At least we have our important things covered with electricity, phone, and internet. Got to have that air conditioning. It's been in the high 80s here all week. Oh, and we have Netflix, too, so we don't get bored. Our Miami Heat are in the Eastern Conference Finals in a tough series with the Bulls. And Lorraine and I are going to a baseball game this weekend. So there's lots of fun here. Well, we got to see the Beach Boys at the baseball game. That's a special treat. And that's the way it is. May 19th, 2011. As I hand the reins to my co-host, Mike Pelichek, an American writer.
Hello, Chuck. Nice to hear your voice again this week. The weather report in Duluth is fair and sunny, tell you the truth. It's 75 degrees. This week we're welcoming Ray Ramey and Mel Thorson. I'm not sure quite where Ray is calling from, but Mel will be calling, talking to him from Grand Rapids, Minnesota.
He's so Washington State, Mike.
Okay. So we're coming to you from Vancouver, Fort Lauderdale, Duluth, Washington State, and Grand Rapids. And remember to check out the Nuclear Resistor folks at nukeresistor.org. I think it's real important. It's there you'll find news about Americans fighting against the United States military machine. You'll see places to write to Americans in prison for fighting against Barack Obama and George Bush, Karl Rove, Dick Cheney, Condoleezza Rice, Colin Powell, that type. And remember, freedom is not free. If you are enjoying your freedom today, please thank a protester. And always remember, the Americans in the United States military fighting in Iraq and Afghanistan and Libya are not fighting for our freedom. They are fighting to secure profits for corporations, power for rich men and women. They are actually fighting for empire, murdering people across the globe. The real fighters for freedom are those who are opposing the American military, including those who are opposing the American military here in the U.S. And remember, the American military members stationed in some 700 bases around the globe are not there to secure freedom. That's total BS. When the Soviet Union folded, those troops did not come home. Those bases were not dismantled. There was no peace dividend because it was all a lie. It had nothing to do with freedom. It still doesn't. It has everything to do with money and power. And remember, the tax dollars, the millions and billions of tax dollars we pay to the U.S. military are not for freedom. Those dollars are paying for our own oppression and the oppression of millions of people around the world. Those tax dollars should rather go towards health care, schools, roads, sidewalks, housing. And those who return to Iowa and Minnesota and Ohio and California and Florida, the ones who have been fighting in Iraq and Afghanistan, are not heroes. They are invaders, thugs, murderers, criminals. Any welcome home parade should proceed directly to the county courthouse. And we all know about 9/11 and Osama bin Laden, how the American people have been, well, yeah. Well, here's just one thing to ponder while we are hearing all the lies about the details of the murder of Osama bin Laden. Just think, if those planes had really crashed into the Pentagon, or that plane, or one plane, they say, we would have seen that footage 1 billion times by now on TV. And the places around the Pentagon that had cameras within, I don't know if it was minutes or, you know, it was very quickly the FBI swooped in and took those. And they have not shown it. Remember Building 7, there was no plane that hit that, and it still collapsed in controlled demolition about 5 o'clock that afternoon. And the passengers, think about the passengers. Where did they go? I mean, those planes were loaded below capacity. There's just all kinds of mysteries about where the passengers went. And Shanksville, just look at that hole in the ground. They say a plane went into that and disintegrated. It didn't happen. And the same as this thing about Osama bin Laden, we just say, oh, okay, fine. Just as long as we're able to continue with our routine, and then everything's fine. That's all we really want to do. I know that because I know myself. It's the human condition. I don't know. I don't think being stupid is a reason, because we're the ones who invented kiwi strawberry milkshakes. It can't be stupid. It must be something else. The new American dream, what's this all about? It's about becoming the sort of country we always say that we are. And that's never been more important than it is today. Let me quick read this quote from John Updike. This is from his book, The Terrorist. The great city sprawls with people, some smartly dressed, many of them shabby, a few beautiful, but most not, all reduced by the towering structures around them to the size of insects, but scuttling, hurrying, intent in the milky morning sun upon some plan or scheme or hope they are hugging to themselves, their reason for living another day. Each one of them impaled live upon the pin of consciousness, fixed upon self-advancement and self-preservation, that and that only. That's from The Terrorist by John Updike. And I think that we'll never get to be the type of people we think we should be, the kind of country we think we should be, unless we get over being just like that. And that's just how we are. We're fixed upon self-advancement and self-preservation, that and that only. That's me, and I presume it's you too. At the few times when I was actually doing something, it was with total disregard for family, job, life, future, career, writing books. I'll tell you quickly about a time I was on the run from the FBI. It was my 2 weeks, 15 minutes of fame, 2 weeks of glory, but it was not fun. It was in the 80s. I was supposed to go to the court at Offutt Air for in Omaha for a trespass at Offutt Air Force Base, and I'd been to prison before, so I was a repeat offender. And what I did was I took sanctuary in the cathedral at Omaha, and I was I really was a big Catholic back then. I really believed in the church and all that, and so the reason I went to take sanctuary was to to force the bishop to make a statement on Offutt Air Force Base, and the bishop at that time was in favor of deterrence, and I just thought that was very much contrary to the gospel. Anyway, I decided I wasn't going to surrender, so I kind of, there was FBI agents around the building. We had very good reason to believe. And what I did was I took a garbage sack and I put it over my shoulder and I put my hood over my head and I walked out the side door with a garbage sack like, I don't know, like a custodian, and my wife had put a car there. So I escaped the cathedral and I was, first I went to a Omaha priest's cabin on a river there. And, it was just a very sick feeling. I really kind of hated it. It was, it wasn't fun. In the rest of the underground experience, we went to Ruth's folks' place in a farm in South Dakota, and Sam, our son was, he was about 2 at the time. It was just a sick feeling that I knew I'd be arrested eventually, and I'd maybe go to prison for years. I didn't know. But the thing is, the important thing I'm trying to say is that that is where nations get born and revolutions happen. That's where somebody gets health care, taxes, military. That's where housing, schools, the poor, wars get stopped. That's the zone you're in when things happen. It's not the zone of go to work and make it to the gym and then pick up a bottle of wine on the way home just in time to watch the great Thursday night lineup. That's not it. And saving money and figuring out how much money you need to retire on and planning the tour of Europe and the grandkids' college education. That's not the zone you're in when things really happen. I wonder if we will ever have the courage to do what the people of Egypt have done and other people. It's not because we don't have a reason. It's more in line with, have we got anything better to do today? The ones with the power desperately depend on our being afraid. But you have to admit we've made progress. Sometimes downward progress has its merits. As they say, in the exotic fish-gathering black market world, you have to hit rock bottom in order to begin. And so finally, we have the winds of our own totalitarian society freezing the land solid, a tortured tundra. Finally, we can make a difference by reading and writing the truth, because the newspapers and television and radio are now so obviously not telling the truth. It's a perfect ironic situation. The only real way for this to happen was that we hit rock bottom. Because, we cannot say the truth. Your relatives, your chair at Thanksgiving dinner will suddenly be empty if you say the truth. Your relatives have sent you to Siberia with a roll of their eyes. And we are there in the basement at the dusty exile's table, holding a greasy turkey leg in our greasy hands, getting grease all over our faces. So let us begin. Okay, here we go. Scooch up to the samovar. Maybe leave your hat and boots on. Fill your peasant hands with a warm drink and listen for the sound of hoofbeats on the ice. The forces of evil, the large corporations, the United States military, Barack Obama, desperately want us to be afraid. They need us to be afraid. We cannot be afraid.
Rock Creek gently flows through the parkland of Washington, D.C., until it meets the mighty Potomac River in the heart of the federal city. On the other hand, Rock Creek Free Press is a fiercely independent newspaper that's not afraid to print the truth. We print the stories that others won't touch. The 9/11 cover-up, media propaganda, government corruption, state terrorism, and violations of our constitutional rights. The Creek is a completely reader-supported publication. We accept no corporate advertising, no corporate influence. For a free, no-obligation issue of The Creek, just go to rockcreekfreepress.com. If you want copies for your local 9/11 truth group, send your request to editor@rockcreekfreepress.com. Rock Creek Free Press, not afraid to print the truth.
And now, back to the show with your hosts, Chuck Gregory and Mike Pelichek.
Nominations are currently being accepted to rename all the places we've named for horrible people. Ronald Reagan National Airport, the 10th Mountain Division Highway, the 90th Infantry Division Highway, 173rd Airborne Brigade Memorial Highway, the Gerald Ford Memorial Highway, the George Bush Intercontinental Airport. If we're going to name things after famous bad people, well, why not Ted Bundy National Cemetery, John Wayne Gacy International Airport, Jeffrey Dahmer Memorial Freeway, the Charles Manson Space Needle. Or rather, here's a thought. Why not name things for good people rather than terrible people? Why not the Dan and Phil Berrigan International Airport, the Dorothy Day Interstate, the Emma Goldman Freeway? Brought to you by Citizens for Naming Things After Good People Rather Than Horrible People.
And I'd like to welcome our first guest, Mel Thorson. Mel is a member of the chair of the 9/11 Truth and Justice Committee of the Itasca Progressive Caucus in Grand Rapids, Minnesota. They are a group of like-minded individuals who do not buy the government's official conspiracy theory and intend to educate the public, themselves included, and expose the lies of our government and mainstream media have sold to the American public. Hello, Mel. How are you doing tonight?
I'm doing just fine, Mike. And yourself?
I'm doing great. It's good to finally get a chance to talk to you. How's things in Grand Rapids?
Well, it's nice and warm and sunny today. It seems like maybe we've broke the bonds of winter, I hope.
Yeah, that's true. It's 75 over here. It's just great. Mel, what do you want to tell us today about what's happening in Grand Rapids?
Well, first of all, I'd like to say just a few words about the Itasca Progressive Caucus. And we're one of the six committees there. The other committees are the Veterans for Peace, single-payer health care, poverty, environmental, and the committee that ties all of these issues together, it's a committee against corporate greed. And I'll just go right into it, Mike.
Do you have any questions first? No, I don't really. I can get some if you want to, but I'd just like to give you a chance to talk about what you ever want to talk about.
Okay, yeah, I'll get right into it then. As we in the 9/11 Truth and Justice Peace Movement know, there are many different angles in the horrific crime on September 11, 2001. We need to investigate all of them and keep an open mind as they all are equally important in proving who the guilty parties really are, of which most of us have a pretty good idea. In any crime, there are three factors that are important to show in order to charge a party or parties with the crime. They are means, motive, and opportunity. Although Osama bin Laden was a good patsy for the real perpetrators to use, he must not have fit the bill. For those three factors, as the FBI never has charged him for the crimes on 9/11. In digging deeper, we have found a faction that is more culpable. Shortly after the second plane flew into World Trade Center 2, George W. Bush declared a state of emergency, which was understandable under the circumstances. And the proclamation was put in writing on September 14, 2001, and it still is in effect today. The great writ of habeas corpus was immediately suspended along with that proclamation. Along with the declared emergency, continuity of government measures were also implemented by the White House. I'll get back to that just a little bit later. The National Emergency Act was created as a result of two separate investigations starting in 1973. The first investigation was a Senate investigation into terminating the four national emergencies that the American people had been living under for 40 years. The committee found out there was 470 additional laws put in place by the four declared emergencies. The second investigation was also a Senate investigation that delved into the illegal intelligence activities of the CIA and the FBI during the Nixon era and before that. These abuses ranged from spying on citizens to assassination attempts on foreign leaders. The investigation raised such a stir that the National Emergency Act was passed in Congress to rein in runaway presidents, and it was signed into law in 1976 by Gerald Ford. It's worth noting at this time that Dick Cheney, who loathed the restrictions placed on the chief executive, was President Ford's chief of staff, along with Donald Rumsfeld as the Secretary of Defense. Section 202, subsection D of the National Emergency Act requires the president to renew the act every
year. I think we lost our guest here for a moment.
Well, we'll try to contact Mel again. I think that 9/11 truth is one of the most important issues that we have to deal with. It has everything to do with what's happening today. It has everything to do with what the lies that Barack Obama is telling us. He's always said that we should be in Afghanistan and Iraq. That just is just a total. It's just a thread that runs through the whole Bush administration from, well, you know, from the. I guess it goes all the way back to the stolen elections. I think that they stole them with a. My personal belief is they stole the first election with a purpose and a plan already in mind that they were going to do this. I don't think they sat down afterwards and said, okay, let's take out the World Trade Center and have this world domination plan. I think they already had that in plan. I'm not, you know, who knows how long ahead of that.
We have mail back.
On pages 338 and 326 of the 9/11 Commission report, it states that before Flight 93 crashed into Pennsylvania, the White House implemented continuity of government measures, or COG for short. With this directive, Richard Cheney and Donald Rumsfeld were put in charge of this highly secretive plan they had been involved with since 1982 under Ronald Reagan. COG was originally created in the 1950s under Truman, initially to deal with maintaining government functions under the Constitution if the standing government was decapitated during a nuclear attack. As governor of California from 1966 to 1974, Reagan authorized a counterinsurgency plan codenamed Cable Splicer, which was to deal with anti-war protests and race riots of that time, in conjunction with the U.S. Sixth Army and the Pentagon's parallel plan called Operation Garden Plot, which was designed to do the same thing. As President of the United States, Reagan combined the counterinsurgency programs, Cable Splicer, Garden Plot, with the Federal Emergency Management Agency, and put Lieutenant Colonel Oliver North as the National Security Council Action Officer to it. When the Cold War ended, along with the threat of nuclear war, COG's focus was changed. In the final months of Reagan's presidency, he changed Executive Order 12656 from being invoked after a nuclear war to any national emergency. Portions of this early version of COG parallels the Patriot Act of today by spying on political dissenters, environmental activists, detention of aliens, the suspension of the Constitution, implementation of martial law, overriding the Posse Comitatus Act, and warrantless wiretapping. The highest level of COG planning under Reagan was administered by Vice President Bush and included Lieutenant Colonel Oliver North, Congressman Dick Cheney, and the head of G.D. Searle and Company, who's owned by Monsanto right now, Donald Rumsfeld. Defense Secretary Cheney, who was a CEO of Halliburton from 1995 to 2000, and private sector Rumsfeld, was just as much a part of the shadow government during Clinton's two terms as they were under Reagan and Senior Bush's terms. In the same time period, Cheney and Rumsfeld projected change by lobbying through the Project for a New American Century for a more militant Middle East policy. Until 9/11/2001, the COG had never been implemented, but was a shadow government in waiting. During the Clinton years, Cheney and Rumsfeld's mission changed from the continuity of government to a change of government. On 9/11, from the Presidential Emergency Operations Center, deep under the White House, Cheney ordered Junior Bush to stay away from Washington as he set in motion the COG contingency plans. All the years of secret meetings, thousands of man hours of exercises and planning paid off as Cheney was now able to start the process that would correct what he thought was an infringement of the executive's power, which dated back to Watergate era and the inception of the National Emergency Act. In February 2009, author and political researcher Peter Dale Scott and Dan Hamburg, who was a former U.S. representative from California, appealed in letters to the staffs of President Obama, Nancy Pelosi, Peter DeFazio, and Dennis Kucinich in Congress for them to consider letting the State of Emergency Act expire. There has not been a reply, and they have refused to meet with Scott and Hamburg. We have been living under one declared emergency after another since 1976. There's 19 active right now. As long as the Republic accepts that Osama bin Laden, laying in a bed at military hospital in Rawalpindi, Pakistan, and 19 men of Middle Eastern descent attacked the United States, on September 11th, 2001, on a budget of $300,000, outwitted the largest and best-equipped defense in the world with an annual budget of $40 billion, we're going to remain in a state of emergency and continue to live under the shadow government subjugation. The lies generated by Cheney and his shadow government's false flag operations on September 11, 2001, has ended up in the murder and suffering of millions of innocent men, women, and children, as well as displacing millions of people in Iraq and Afghanistan, Pakistan, Yemen, and now Libya. This red herring was used to start the never-ending global war on terror, which has bankrupted our country, both financially and morally. It is bizarre there, a basic bill of rights that Osama bin Laden supposedly...
We might have lost Mel again.
Okay, I'll hang on. I'll just get him on the line.
Okay. I guess I'll continue with my thought. I think we started with the stolen elections, and I think we're proceeding absolutely according to plan. Not my plan, not the voters' plan, but I think we're proceeding exactly according to somebody's plan, some group's plan. I think they're not flying by the seat of their pants. I think they've. You got to hand it to them. They are very good at what they do. You know, they pulled off this whole president on the TV national podium announcement late at night, preempting all our favorite shows, and everybody goes along with it. And they did not just kill Osama bin Laden. That is documented that he died. And he had kidney disease, and he was a member of the CIA, and there was Sabella Edmonds says that she was an FBI translator, and she said he was a employee of the CIA right up to 9/11. So it's obvious that I think that the work that people like Mel and others. Mel, how you doing there? Got you back?
Yeah, I'm doing good.
Okay. We just got a couple more minutes. Do you have any closing thoughts? I'm sorry we had it dropped, and I don't know why that happened, but we'll just, can you tell us a little bit about what you guys in Grand Rapids are going to do this summer or maybe leading up to the 10th anniversary of 9/11?
Well, we've got something planned every month, Mike. We're starting out next month on June 13th. We're going to put on a community movie, 9/11 Press for Truth, and we're trying to get a speaker for July, and we got a couple calls out, and one of them would be maybe James Fetzer to come up to Duluth and put on a presentation. That would be good, and we're kind of open for August yet, but we're going to be doing some on-the-street interviews. We did them last summer, and we learned a lot ourselves just talking to common, ordinary people on the street. And right now, starting this evening, we started to webcast, and a group in our committee has put together a documentary, kind of an overview of 9/11 for the general public, and we started to webcast that tonight, and we're also going to be putting that on the local cable TV also.
I just want to say, I think I've tried to work in small towns before, and it's good when you have a group. It's a good thing you're not on your own. And I just think it's great that you guys are keeping at this. And it is, in my view, it is the most important work because I think that everything ties back to 9/11. All the foreign policy, everything ties back to 9/11. And in my personal opinion is you guys right there are the true patriots. And I just want to thank you. And, I hope you'll come back again, Mel, and we'll give this another try. Sometimes it takes two or three times for us to get it right, but we'll finally get it right.
Well, thank you very much, and we really appreciate what you guys are doing too. You're true patriots also, and this is what we have to do. We got to get the message out to people because people are so misguided from the mainstream media that it's terrible.
I agree. We just got to keep working at it, Tom. Any way we can. And thanks again, Mel, and have a good night, okay?
Yeah, thank you very much, too. You have a good evening, too, folks.
Rock Creek gently flows through the parkland of Washington, D.C., until it meets the mighty Potomac River in the heart of the federal city. On the other hand, Rock Creek Free Press is a fiercely independent newspaper that's not afraid to print the truth. We print the stories that others won't touch. The 9/11 cover-up, media propaganda, government corruption, state terrorism, and violations of our constitutional rights. The Creek is a completely reader-supported publication. We accept no corporate advertising, no corporate influence. For a free, no-obligation issue of The Creek, just go to rockcreekfreepress.com. If you want copies for your local 9/11 Truth Group, send your request to editor@rockcreekfreepress.com. Rock Creek Free Press, not afraid to print the truth.
And now, back to the show with your hosts, Chuck Gregory and Mike Pelichek.
We are proud to be sponsored this evening by the Minuteman, guarding America's borders from poor people. Our own great-grandparents were poor, and they came here from other places, huddled masses yearning to be free. We, their descendants, the Minutemen, are fighting for freedom from poor people, taking aim at frightened lasses crouching by a tree. We urinate on the Statue of Liberty. We defecate on Ellis Island. We've got ours crunched tight in our cold, dead, clammy hands. In just 60 seconds, we are able to desecrate the whole idea of America. We are the Minutemen.
Ray Ramey is a writer. He's written several novels in different genres. He has a blog called Flogging the Quill, where he talks about writing. And like me, he's an editor. When I read his book, We the Enemy, I just knew I had to invite him to this show. At first glance, the ideas in his novel are outrageous. His state of Oregon has made it a felony to possess a lethal firearm, completely revamped the court system based on a new interpretation of the Fifth Amendment, and made big changes in prison system, too. The thing is, when you're reading this book, everything makes sense. That's what we'll talk about tonight, as I welcome Ray Ramey to the New American Dream Radio Show.
Hello, Chuck.
Hello, Ray. I'm so glad you agreed to join us tonight.
Me too, so far.
Well, okay. I'd like you to talk about some of these ideas. Well, first, maybe, why don't you tell us where did the ideas come before the book, or did they come up while you were writing?
Good question. ideas first. They were sparked by seeing things going on in our society, in our country, that were troublesome. Assaults on people with lethal weapons, children, and that kind of thing were certainly bothersome. And you know, you watch criminals walk out the door on technicalities. So I got to thinking about how could you be different? How could you make changes so that those things didn't happen? And then once I had those ideas more or less firmly in hand, there were a couple of opportunities. One was to write some sort of article about it and just say, here's what I think. But it seemed to me to make more sense to, in a sense, try them on for size. And that led to a novel in which the characters experience a society in which some of these things are operative and encounter them just the way you or I would. They don't know about them. They haven't lived with them. And we see what happens.
Why don't you tell people about the these non-lethal firearms?
Okay. You know, our country struggles with firearms. And there are a lot of movements to try to change how the possession goes and everything. Well, it occurs to me that that's simply not going to change unless there's a viable alternative. Firearms in our society are generally thought of as being used for self-defense. And in a society with violence, that makes a certain amount of sense. So I thought about, what about a non-lethal weapon? A weapon that you could, with which you could defend yourself, not necessarily point blank against a gunpowder weapon, but still defend yourself against an attack or an assault. And that led to the creation of a weapon I call in the novel stoppers, because they stop people. I conjectured three kinds of rounds for these little weapons. One is sort of a mace, cayenne pepper spray kind of thing, which will certainly stop people in certain circumstances. Another one was I call a tangle, which is a substance that when it's fired expands and it'll wrap around old legs or arms or something and pin could, you know, hold someone down. And the third was the idea of NAP, which is a sleep chemical. I was based it on the chemical fentanyl. I'm not sure how to pronounce it. But it's a chemical that will induce sleep. So the idea was if these were manufactured and made in safe enough forms that a person could defend, let's say a woman could defend herself against an assault by someone intent on raping her with one of these weapons without killing him or endangering herself. So that was the genesis of all of that, was what is the alternative for self-defense in a society that needs self-defense.
This was a particularly inventive and fun idea, but at the same time, it almost sounds practical. Are all of these things possible with today's technology?
That's my understanding from my research, that indeed these chemicals do exist. The weapon would be air-powered. So, you know, air guns are all over the place. Your Crossman shop could probably sell these. They could also be, in the novel, I also suggest the idea that gunpowder weapons are modified so that they can still fire these particular kinds of ammunition, but with a very low level of charge. So, yeah, it's possible. And the reason for conjecturing this is this. In our society, market forces are huge, if not the determinant of many, many, many things that happen. It seems to me that laws, regulations, social beliefs and conventions about weaponry are not going to change until the people who make the money off of the weapon systems as they are have an incentive to do something different. So the idea is that if these weapons were not only possible, but popular, the same weapons manufacturers who make lethal weapons could make lots of money making these weapons. That might, at some level, start changing things. Who knows? The idea behind We the Enemy is to start people to thinking about things. I'm not saying that my solutions are the solutions, but they are something to get out of the box a little bit and walk around and say, maybe we could do something, not that, but something different that would take care of some of our problems.
Well, in my book, as it were, that's what writing is all about, is making people think. Why don't you tell us a little about the reinterpretation of the Fifth Amendment?
I wonder even if it is a reinterpretation. Here's what the clause says. No person shall be compelled in any criminal case to be a witness against himself, nor be deprived of life, liberty, or property without due process of law. Well, if you take out the stuff in the intervening clauses about life, liberty, or property, it says, no person shall be compelled to testify against himself without due process of law. Well, then logically, if there is a due process of law established in some court system, in some state, just as there is a due process for depriving someone of their life, we can execute people. We can deprive someone of their liberty. We can imprison them. We can take away their property with a number of laws because there is a due process of law to do those things that are otherwise banned under this this amendment. So why not, then, logically, could you not be compelled to testify if there is a due process of law that makes it legal? So that's just, I have to confess that I have not asked a lot of lawyers about this, but it's just, it makes a lot of sense when you look at what the actual words of the clause are and what they say and what we do. We do four of the five things listed already with due process of law. So that was the idea. Then the other thing is that how do you get to the truth of things that's one way, is to say, look, you got to tell us the truth. And the other thing is in the novel, in We the Enemy, I utilized a technology called brain fingerprinting. It's not lie detection. It's an analysis and of brain waves, of brain activity that will, as so far as I can understand it, within 99% accuracy, let you know whether someone is telling the truth or not, not in the sense of a lie or not, but whether that knowledge is in their brain. So if you hook that up with the idea that you really have to say what really happened, it's the law, then maybe we could get a lot of truth in our courts rather than some of the things that do seem to go on. Does that make sense?
It makes an extraordinary amount of sense, and some of it's a little scary, but at the same time, it's hard to argue against it. Ray, as we wind down here, I'm going to suggest that people find you and find this book, We the Enemy, so they can learn about what happens after people go to court. You had some very interesting ideas there as well. Why don't you tell us briefly about your other projects and your websites? Make sure people know where to find you on the web.
Thank you very much. Just let me add one thing I've lost that thought. Never mind. One of the things in the book, though, that I think is important is not technology, it's not law, it's social. And that is, a part of the thinking is, how on earth can we get these changes to happen? Well, it can happen only if people get together, but under what system or what rules or what mores do these people get together to do these things? So that's a part of We the Enemy as well. You can find me, you can search for the book on Amazon.com if you want to look for that. And you'll find it. I have a website, rayramey.com. Eponymous, is that what the word is? Anyway, that was kind of fun to do. And you can find me there. You can Google me. You can go to my blog, Logging the Quill, which is loggingthequill.com, about writing. And you'll find links there as well. So I'm sort of out there on the internet now. I've got other projects, other publishing. I've got a small publishing company, an indie company. I will do book design, book cover design, book design, editing. I've published two other novels. One is one is titled The Vampire Kitty Cat Chronicles. It is a very different book from We the Enemy. It's a spoof, a satire of the whole vampire thing. And the hero and narrator of the book is Tomcat. It's a lot of fun. And then there's another novel out that's, I would say, a contemporary fantasy, is not quite the word. It's speculative in a sense. Story about what if there were such a thing that's like magic but real. So anyway, I just explore things. I'm working now right now on a coming-of-age novel that has a mystery at its roots. And I'm just going to keep firing books out there until somebody starts reading them.
Will there be anything more, any follow-up on We the Enemy or those ideas?
I have a sequel in mind, one or two. It's going to be, it's just a matter of time and interest and motivation as to whether I tackle that. It is a challenge to write a whole novel, as you can understand. 80,000-90,000 words have to be put together in a coherent fashion. But I do have a sequel in mind for it. That takes up from where We the Enemy ends. The conflict continues, let me tell you, because the forces of the status quo are align themselves against what's going on in Oregon and surrounding states.
Well, Ray, thank you very much for appearing with us tonight, and I hope to read that sequel when you get around to it. And I hope that our listeners will find you and find your books.
That would be
Thanks
great.
Again.
I would love to hear from them, from anyone who reads it. And let's talk about it or email about it or discuss what's what's in there. Someone wrote in an Amazon review that it was a very unusual novel and that it was a page-turner, kind of a thriller, and a dissection of the legal system. So it's got a couple things going for it. I thank you very much, Chuck, for allowing me to talk about this, because it's a novel of the heart, as they say, something that I spent a lot of time on and a lot of belief in.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
Chuck, we've got this just in, this late-breaking news brief. The House Un-American Activities Committee will be reconvening next week. The committee will be investigating un-American activities such as the murder of children in Iraq and Afghanistan and the restricting of personal freedoms through the so-called Patriot Act, as well as the infiltration of American organizations by members of clandestine terror groups. Are you now or have you ever been a member of the Central Intelligence Agency? Appearing next week before the committee will be Dan Rather, Tom Brokaw, Matt Lauer, Katie Couric, Diane Sawyer, Brian Williams, and in absentia, Peter Jennings. Stay tuned. Well, it's been a long week in Mount Liberty, Nebraska, my hometown. On Sunday, it was 90 degrees. It had to be a record. Everyone told each other, and sure enough, it was. At the 8:30 a.m. Mass, Father Tony Marconi came out in his white vestments and a pin with a picture of Osama bin Laden saying, "We got him." Tony walks straight out from the sacristy, big smile, his hands raised, and marches right up and shakes the hands of all the people in the front row, scaring the holy crap out of everyone. The kids call him Macaroni. He's just out of the seminary, and he's also the president and founder of the Mary Our Queen Rosary Club. He had three members of the National Guard on the altar with him during the 8:30 a.m. Sunday morning Mass, thanking them for contributing to the war in Afghanistan, the death of Osama bin Laden, and for our freedom to worship the Prince of Peace and the church of our choice. Father Tony also had Canute, the school custodian, haul over the donkey and the sheep and baby Jesus crib and the Joseph and Mary statues, along with the National Guards, and Mrs. Walter Sims and Mrs. Sherwood Prinz from the Rosary Club, and also with the whole contingent of the Knights of Columbus in full regalia with feathered hats and swords and white gloves. They lined the middle aisle, the two side aisles. All these folks together reenacted the killing of Osama bin Laden. While the whole thing was going on, the children's choir in the balcony sang the theme from A Fistful of Dollars as a soft backdrop. And there have been more burials at sea. Mr. Grant, shop teacher, buried at sea. Carl Quantrell, a postal carrier, buried at sea. The Carlson's Auburn poodle, Trevor, buried at sea. Sister Mona Corona, buried at sea, and Shirley Francis, lunch lady, buried at sea. And we have continue, as we have for the past almost 10 years in our town, to do our part to contribute to Homeland Security. We have lookouts 24-7, 365 on the water tower looking for terrorists. We also have deputized citizens going undercover looking for terrorists at the swimming pool, the grocery store, and also at the county fair. And now that Osama bin Laden has been killed, their stories can be told. Because probably the war on terror will end, just like in the early 90s when the Soviet Union folded and we put all that money from military weapons into healthcare, schools, and roads in the peace dividend. Now we'll probably bring all the troops home and cut defense spending down to almost zero and close the military bases overseas, because what other reason would they be there for, see? And then we'll spend the money on fixing sidewalks and tuck pointing the old schools and letting people get healthcare when they need it. And so now finally, for the stories from the files of the patriots who have kept us free over this past decade, and a big thank you and welcome home.
Is this heaven? Well, from up here, it kind of does maybe seem like that. I'm way up here on the water tower. Well, not on the water tower, on that walkway that goes around. You got one of those silver pointed ones. Not so big. Not like the big round white ones they have in Fremont and Columbus. Ours depicts at various times the town name, current graduating class, the current mayor's current girlfriend, and the current state of the local educational system via spelling acumen. Well, I've been stationed up here by the local city council to look for terrorists, for Jesus Liberty, maybe his gang. He might have a gang. some of the reports we've been getting. I'm scanning the perimeter, looking for the Nebraska terrorist, Jesus Liberty, as well as any other terror type. They gave me this cool pith helmet with netting and a beeper. I get a beeper. I've tried it. It beeps. I've got this assistant, Jordan. He's going to be in fifth grade in the fall. He sends me up extra water on this pulley system he fixed up. Anyway, maybe I'm facing the wrong way, but what I see is Mrs. Vandergriesen pulling into the Hy-Vee lot. She's been pulling in for most of the morning. There's a special on iceberg lettuce. And I see Jared Vandenboom. He's driving around in the cruiser, mostly watching me. Most of the city council is coming out of the coffee at family table. They're not really supposed to get together like that. It makes people think they're planning, making decisions outside of meeting. They're pointing up at me. Hey, guys! There's the spire of St. Lucie's Catholic Church over in Mount Carl. On the other side of the corn and soybeans and the river and the dump and the National Guard Armory. I'll keep my eyes peeled. Don't worry about a thing. The perimeter is secure. I'll let you know if I see anything. Hasta los tacos. Oh, there's Lula Vanderswag. I could see a lot more if I had some binos. Hey! Hey, Jordan!
Hey, come here, come here. Hey, shh, I have to whisper. I am here amid the market lambs and the Myers family. Shh. I wish you could see me, but I'm incognito. I have managed to slip inside the infrastructure of the Ace County Fair. The sun is shining bright. It is hot. It is very early, but the little bleachers and the sheep judging arena are already packed hip to butt to brisket. Over here. I am the understudy judge, my public persona. Actually, I am here under the not quite official auspices of the United States Department of Homeland Security. Although I understand that if I am captured, they will deny any knowledge of me whatsoever. I'm used to that. My parents said the same thing. I get to wear this green vest with a big button with a photo of a sheep. And there are about 100 other badges on the vest, all for starting fires. I'm wondering if I might have belonged to an insane Girl Scout at one time. I've got a straw hat that kind of hangs in my eyes, black rimmed glasses, yellow judging shorts, the real deal. I'll be here all week. My goal is to get over to the Nebraska sweet corn dipped in butter and then chocolate booth and back here without losing my spot. Bah! Oops, that just came out. For some reason, I'm finding out I have a certain affinity with sheep, but I'm not taking my eye off the target, not for a moment. I have my eyes on the prize. There isn't anything or anybody in this arena that will escape my extreme scrutiny. Go about your day. I got this. I actually think the guy in the brand new coveralls in the third row from the bottom would fry up real well. And his wife has good muscling and a nice rump. They both have good thickness through the leg with natural thickness as well over the top. Definition is apparent with good straightness of lines. Bah, sorry, ma'am. Undercover. Hey, while there is a break here, I want to tell you about something. Something about sheep and human beings and how to tell the difference.
Jesus, Mary and Joseph. God bless America. Hey. Oh, my God. How you doing? Let me catch my breath. I'm deployed with the guys on one of the silver metal benches outside the city swimming pool. We're watching. For terrorists. Dude. They can't swim. Just like Negroes and wetbacks. Dead dog giveaway. It's also late in the summer. I suppose the moms have those El Primo tans as well as the lifeguards in their one-piece red suits and those whistles that dangle like necklaces. Anyhow. That'd be myself, Don, Milt, Al, Fred. We're the newly formed Municipal Special Forces Team. Total Information Terror Surveillance. We've been duly organized and chartered and deputized, I think, by the city council to guard against terrorists. Beginning this month, running through the school year is how I understand it. Scott came up with this idea to come here. The pool's open up to Labor Day. He asks, why do you think they call them wetbacks? The rest of us had to admit it made perfect sense. Of course, everybody knows Arab types will often position towels on their heads. A lot of towels around here today. Al's got four in his lap. Won't give any out to anybody without good reason, he says. It's hot today. Lots to watch, keep track of, monitor, observe. Sometimes we get soaked. We're pretty close to the action. We act like we like it that way. Al's got the beeper in case we need to call for backup towels. His wife's home most of the day. Tomorrow she's got shit to do. By now, the lifeguards don't wear that white stuff on their noses. Everything au naturel. We've got sunglasses from the Ben Franklin store, orange terror vests and shorts, and special Homeland orange hard hats. That was Al's idea. They came from the state highway maintenance shed from the big patch job they had last summer, out by the go-kart track. If it gets too hot, well, Dan's going to ask a councilman who's his neighbor if he can take them off while the pool has rest break. Get some breeze. Some ladies get up quick when they're napping on their stomachs and they get splashed. Maybe they'll have that one string knot tied. Mild had to go home early yesterday. You know, it gets to a guy. This work's not for everybody. We've each got a terror whistle and a string around our neck. Fred blew his loud for about a minute straight just a few minutes ago. Mrs. DeChamplain had walked past on her way to the water fountain. I don't think he even knew he was doing it. Some days, it's about all a guy can do not to blow the damn thing all day long. Don keeps his in his mouth all the time like a referee. Does not move, scratch, nothing. He loves freedom that darn much. He's so dedicated. An inspiration to all of us. Okay, well, nothing happening here at the moment. Oh, look out. Cannonball. God bless the USA. Go about your day. I got this.
Que paso? I am sitting in Greg's hometown food store detective looking for terrorists, securing the homeland on the front lines. As always, just trying to do my part to ensure the freedom of my fellow Americans. I'm looking for Mexicans who might be illegally alive, who do not have the proper stamp on the papers in their pocket and thus deserve to be separated from their weeping children and sent to wherever we want to send them in a hot, crowded, white INS van. If you can see me from where you are seated, you'd know that I am also sitting on the floor in the corner between the white milk and the tortillas at the end of the Mexican foods aisle. It is my charge to find any Islamicists, Hispanicists, or other terror-type individuals. I am also to tackle anyone I suspect of being from Iowa, Greg says. I am undercover as per usual. I'm wearing a big wide sombrero. My head is drooping to my knees, but I am not sleeping. Sometimes I'm sleeping. Sometimes snoring. I get a beeper. I'm wearing a new white t-shirt with blood red letters. Pinche puta store detective. Pretty cool. Go about your day. I got this. And that's the news from Mount Liberty, where all the soldiers are thugs, all the Democrats are cowards, and all the summer help bounty hunters are about average.
And that's another New American Dream radio show. We'd like to thank Rock Creek Free Press for continuing to sponsor us. We'd like to thank World News Trust for having our show's website. We hope listeners will visit the New American Dream websites, newamericandream.net, and the books websites, newamericandream.info, and the radio show website, theshow.newamericandream.info. I'm Chuck Gregory of CWG Services. And I do websites. I put together all these websites, and I'd like to do yours too if you're interested. Take a look. Join us again next week. Same time, same place. Thank you, and good night, Mike.
Good night, Chuck. Stay warm. Good night, Mrs. Calabash. Good night, Todd Beamer. And good night, Barbara Olson, wherever you are.
Rock Creek gently flows through the parkland of Washington, D.C., until it meets the mighty Potomac River in the heart of the federal city.
On the other hand, Rock Creek Free Press is a fiercely independent newspaper that's not afraid to print the truth. We print the stories that others won't touch. The 9/11 cover-up, media propaganda, government corruption, state terrorism, and violations of our constitutional rights. The Creek is a completely reader-supported publication. We accept no corporate advertising, no corporate influence. For a free, no-obligation issue of The Creek, just go to rockcreekfreepress.com. If you want copies for your local 9/11 Truth Group, send your request to editor@rockcreekfreepress.com. Rock Creek Free Press, not afraid to print the truth.
New from U.S. author Mike Palachuk, Camp America. Here's what American poet David Ray has to say. Mike Palachuk reminds me of Socrates, the gadfly who asked unwelcome questions, Diogenes with his lantern looking in vain for an honest man, Chekhov, the man with the hammer challenging the complacent family to share their meal, Kerouac, the ever-on-the-move, somewhat hysterical searcher, and he also reminds me of many Americans who as children were so blasted with propaganda that they're devoting the rest of their lives to challenging the lies and all who tell them. In this land where babies are brought by storks and buildings collapse due to unpatriotic bricks, we need the gadfly. Because no leader, preacher, guru, or saint will wake us up, though the doomsday clock is ticking close to 12. David Ray, American poet, author of The Endless Search and The Death of Sardanapalus and other poems of the Iraq Wars. To order Camp America and all of Mike Palachuk's books, go to the New American Dream website, www.newamericandream.info. Howard Zinn writes, Mike Palachuk writes with passion, wit, and always with a strong social conscience. Camp America, from author Mike Palachuk. The website again, newamericandream.info.